Machete Mate recognizes the traditional owners of the land on which we are recording. We pay our respects to their elders, past and present, and any indigenous elders of other communities who may be listening today. We stand in solidarity in their struggle towards the colonization and land back. Buenas, mi gente. What is good? Machete Mate, current events today, and we have a lot to cover. So full transparency, none of the stories that we're talking about today we'll be able to do proper justice to, because these are just historically big stories talking about historically important regions. Anyway, but first, shout out to our new compas oficiales, our patrons, Nick, Anlin, Eric, and Carlos. Muchas gracias, bienvenido a la familia. On that note, we also recently created Discord for our compas oficiales, and it's fucking going off. Nah, actually, in all seriousness, we've been talking about corn and comrade barbecues and being from the People's Republic of Virginia, Carolina, because it feels like everyone's from like either Virginia or fucking North Carolina or South Carolina, or that area, whatever. I don't give a fuck, bro. We got people from all over the place. I don't know. I love the comrades from that area. We have channels for organizing and current events. Yeah, it was deep south. I love the South. You know, I'm kind of geographically from the South, even though not culturally. I don't know. That's Florida. Anyway, let me do my fucking intro, guys. We have channels for organizing current events so the homies can drop articles or stories they've come across and found interesting. It's been dope hanging out. Not to mention, very humbling. It's really cool seeing people who like really dig what we're doing here, because we think we're just three knuckleheads just talking through a mic. But people dig what we do, so it's really, really appreciated, really humbling. So if you want access to our little Machete Matista community and the After Dark episodes, like Austin's detailing of the DSA pilgrimage to Venezuela, and or just generally support what we do and what we're about, consider showing your solidarity on our Patreon. It's a lot for a little bit. Even if you don't, we're just happy and grateful you're tuning in. At the end of the day, we're all one big anti-imperialist family. Also, if you haven't checked out our last episode, a comrade conversation with our dear comrade and just overall sweetheart, Fern, definitely check that out. He talks about the political history of Brazil from his perspective and his journey from a kid in Brazil to an incredible father and working class organizer in the U.S. while still keeping organizing ties with Brazil. I'm Leroy from currently locked down NARM, known to y'all as Melbourne, Australia, here with the homies T. What is good, T?
What's up? Just too much fucking news happening right now. There's too much fucking news.
Yeah. This is too many takes, too many news. And of course, Austin, what's good, man?
What's up? Happy to be here doing current events for the first time. I think I've been on one for like a month. So good times.
in like 20 years, yes. Feels like. Yeah, it. Anyway, just quickly before we get into it, just quick vibe check. How are we actually feeling? How's today? T's looking a bit tired here, man. What's going on?
Man, it's the same old shit. I mean, I'm about to be a broken record on this, but it's just, you know, it's been a long couple weeks. That's all I'll say, you know. But overall, feeling good. The podcast makes me feel good. Hanging out and chatting with you fellas perks me up, makes, you know, puts a smile on my face. So I'm good to be here.
That's really fucking cute, man. That's cute.
Keeping it real, Austin. Man. You know. What about yourself, brother?
Me or Austin?
I guess that's true. well, obviously, I was talking about you, Leroy. Fuck Austin. I'm indifferent to his ass.
It's very strong.
To your flesh and bone. Yeah. Nah, same shit, man. Like, we're in lockdown number 5. Like, not to sound like Lou Bega. Lockdown number 5. But,
oh my goodness.
Quick lockdown.
Oh my God.
We were meant to come
fucking
out of lockdown.
Dad jokes.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, it comes in. It's, look, dad jokes choose you. You don't choose dad jokes. It just comes with the territory. But yeah, it was meant to be a 5-day lockdown. So tonight at 11:59 p.m., we're supposed to come out and go back to, I guess, COVID normal tomorrow. But cases kept going up, so we're gonna be locked down until at least tomorrow, with an extension, I guess, till further notice. It'll probably be another 5-day lockdown, because the last few lockdowns have been sort of short snap lockdowns, like just like kind of 5 days, not like the ones we had last year where they were like months long. So yeah, I still have to go to work because apparently click and collect retail people are essential. You know what I mean? So I'm at work like just finding shit to do. So I can't tell you how many times I've dusted the same fucking like desk and shit. You know what I mean? But it is what it is. Keeps me paid, I suppose. Like, I don't know, man. I'm just trying to find, you know, some silver lining in it. But yeah, Austin, how about you, motherfucker?
I'm feeling great. Like I said, first current events I've been back for basically like a month, right? It's been quite a summer, I have to say, you know, from being, you know, going to Venezuela, right? That happened. Meeting Maduro, right? That happened. And if you're curious about how that happened, subscribe to the Patreon. Meeting Castillo, who, as you know, you'll touch upon in a brief moment here, Leroy will literally be certified president and be president in about a week. That's extremely awesome. I'm extremely excited to probably very, very likely go to visit some of the homies down in Atlanta this weekend. That's going to be fun. Super busy month. I mean, my God, it's always good to be here on the pod talking about things that are so very important, right? Bringing Latin American news to an English speaking audience is a critically important thing that I'm always happy to do with both of you.
That's a good tagline, like bringing Latin American news to an English speaking audience. We'll put that on a t-shirt or some shit, like a bumper sticker or whatever. But yeah, we'll just get into it. So first we'll do headlines. So first, like you just mentioned, Austin, I'm in Peru. The JNE, so like the electoral commission there, has officially recognized and declared compañero Pedro Castillo Terrones as the winner of the election after the dismissal of Fujimori's latest Hail Mary fraud claim and her subsequent face-planting, shit-eating concession. just in the nick of time, too, because the due date was next week, and otherwise that whole congressional circus that we've previously talked about would have kicked in, whereby the Congress sort of appoints someone until they figure the shit out and blah, 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 blah. But T, you, just before we actually came on, I noticed you tweeted something about this sort of being by design to, I guess, put them in a position where they're scrambling out of the starting line. Like, can you just quickly mention that? Because I found that really interesting. I don't disagree, but I found that really interesting.
Oh, well, I mean, it kind of struck me as that this is the first of what is presumably going to be a series of sabotages that are no doubt going to take place. I see this as kind of the opening salvo from not necessarily the reactionaries, but the system itself. The political system itself that has been under the grip of reactionaries for so long.
Yeah, 100%. And just on that, I think this underscores the whole thing we always talk about, how a lot of the times, a lot of the sabotaging they do comes under the law. You know what I mean? So here, there's nothing illegal. So they've technically certified him before the time. You know, they're doing him a favor by not forcing Congress to do this. But we all know what's going on. I'm sure they're organized enough, and I'm sure Austin has more insight into this. They're organized enough to have everything in place beforehand, but this does sort of, I'm sure they were sort of on standby for a while, and now they have to scramble to sort of implement everything they were trying to do. I don't know if you want to expound upon that, Austin, with any sort of insight from that. But
what is remarkable is, you know, I go back to something I've said consistently about Peru Libre, which is how organic of a movement they are, how much of a reflection of the people they are. This is an organic movement of the workers, right? This is a guy who, Pedro Castillo wasn't in the fucking Congress, right? This is a dude who's literally about to become president of one of the largest economies in the world, who was just a fucking like teachers union leader. Like, this is some serious shit. Like, we could spend a whole podcast, dare I say, and we have plenty of times, right? We could spend a whole podcast talking about how earth-shatteringly important this is, how much this affects the geopolitics of the region. Somebody like Pedro Castillo becoming president of Peru. I saw a tweet earlier today from what was it, the populism account or whatever, that said something like, if you'd have told a political analyst a year ago that this guy was going to be president, they would have laughed at you. Dude, like, that's an understatement, but it's true. Like I think I
I don't think they would have laughed. They would have been like, who?
I was about to say, like, because here's the thing. Like, I look at Chile, right? And we'll talk about Chile a little bit later, Gabriel Boric. If you went a year back and said Gabriel Boric, and let's assume it is a fantasy world where Gabriel Boric wins. If you went a year back and told a Chilean analyst that Gabriel Boric was going to be president, they'd probably look at you and be like, oh, wow, that's shocking. But maybe that could happen, right? Even if the average leftist may have only heard about this guy like a fucking week ago. He's been known in Chilean politics. Pedro Castillo literally came the fuck out of nowhere, right? And for this dude coming from Peru Libre, which is officially a Marxist-Leninist political party, who will be president of Peru? They're in government? Damn!
No, but to Austin's point, like, this is incredible that's happening. To that point, even with the first round of voting, the news agencies didn't even have a picture of fucking Pedro Castillo, like, ready. It was just, like, a silhouette of him, and then he ended up becoming president. Yep. Again, we can't explain to you, we can't overestimate, or over whatever the fuck, overemphasize how important this is, but we'll see how we go. And again, there's a bit of fuckery going afoot, to T's point, but fuck Fujimori, fuck the right wing of Peru. You know, go eat some shit. I don't know, you lost.
Sorry, last thought here. It's just wait and see, right? Will Castillo be able to change the Constitution, right? How will the Congress react, right? This is, once again, wait and see. Critical support. Castillo's rhetoric on another thing we'll be talking about, Cuba, has been encouraging, right? And God, to have the president of Peru talking about lifting the blockade. What the fuck? Anyway, sorry, keep going.
Yeah, well, we'll put a bow on that. But yeah, 100%. Second headline, which makes me chuckle. Unless you've been living under a rock, you know that Bolsonaro has some doo-doo hiccups. So he was so backed up, like he had like chronic hiccups and shit. And had to get hospitalized. He's been in there. I don't know what the latest. There's video of him like walking around, connect to an IV and shit. But this motherfucker was on the point of death again. Like this motherfucker is like 80% IV fluid, like 50% COVID at this point. Like it's remarkable that he's still alive. But in saying that, fuck him. Go Lula.
Go Lula.
They were draining shit from his nostrils. Yeah, that was real. That wasn't just someone that people were making up. It was actually coming out of his fucking nose.
Yeah, and when you say shit, you're literally talking about poop, right? You're not talking about draining like just random shit. No, they were draining poop from his nostrils. Let's be clear.
He was when I said he was backed up, this motherfucker had shit, like feces backed up. Because this motherfucker's full of shit. see what I did there.
But yo, yeah, I love the dad joke.
I hope he's seriously, what can I say? And speaking of dad, again, this Brazil story, check out our conversation with Fern. I'm sure absolutely. When you've heard the news, he was just joyful and gleeful, whatever. But fuck Bolsonaro, I hope he's suffering. I hope it's painful. I hope he fucking dies soon. We'll see what happens. That was sort of some levity. Our third headline before we actually get into it, a little bit more serious, I guess a lot more serious. The protests have been breaking out in Guatemala. They've broken out by the people, of course, against the government, I guess, against perceived mismanagement of the COVID crisis there. So apparently they bought or organized a bunch of vaccines. There's nowhere near enough vaccines for the people. Numbers have been exploding. But the president, Alejandro Giammattei, has just been focusing on repressing the protests and shit. Austin, I know you're a bit... better inform the story. Like what am I missing here?
Yeah, no, I mean, real quick, I mean, Guatemala is always just a place that I wish, you know, we everybody talked about more, right? It's just but that's a side note, I suppose. 100%. Right, the you know, the cost for, you know, medicine in Guatemala, you know, dramatically rised after, you know, during the pandemic, right, because of the extremely fucked up capitalist system that has been, you know, imposed upon them from the United States, quite literally, after, you know, the civil wars of the 20th century. But, you know, Giammattei himself is and his administration has come under heavy fire for having, God, last I checked, was the third lowest vaccination rate in, if not in the hemisphere, possibly in the world. Like really bad, like levels of COVID mismanagement to the response. And it's been devastating for, as you might imagine, the poor communities of Guatemala, the indigenous communities of Guatemala. It's just amazing to me, right? This is, you know, this is a country with an indigenous majority, right? And you've got this extremely Italian asshole who's president, right? Dr. Giammattei, go fuck yourself, right? He's very much not that. He's a bad guy, right? He's a bad guy we're talking about. But maybe, I don't know. It's, and once again, the dichotomy of the way people have covered the protests in Cuba, And the bad response from the Cuban government to COVID while completely ignoring everything that's gone on in Guatemala to me is very instructive and illustrative of how U.S. media treats Latin America.
I think those are two very good words, very illustrative and instructive. You can learn a lot about policy through these responses and what's going on right now, because we know what the fuck is going on, but obviously, whatever. But our main stories, so we'll be tackling Haiti finally, because shit has been popping off there since the president was literally popped off weeks ago. Obviously, we're going to be talking about Cuba as well, everything is going there. And we're going to be touching on Chile and the primary results that came out yesterday. Some positive, some hopeful, some, you know, this and that, whatever. But again, especially when it comes to the Haiti and the Cuba story, there's no fucking way we're going to be able to do these stories justice, because these are two very historically important places that without understanding the complete like material history of these two places, will you be able to properly understand what's going on today? But we'll do our best to give you cliff notes and I guess just sort of bird's eye view what's going on with these specific cases here. But we'll start in Haiti. So I'll give a quick rundown of what's been going on, and then we can probably riff off of it and have a bit of conversation. Like I said, it's old news by now, but it's still consequential, just like everything that happens in Haiti. Jovenel Moise, U.S.-backed president of the world's first black republic and perpetual neocolonial punching bag, Haiti, was assassinated on July 7th after years of anti-him unrest, resulting from him refusing to step down when he was supposed to, and this whole election 2019 that didn't take place. So he's been ruling by decree since then, so people didn't really like that, so they've been taking to the streets and protesting him, which not stepping down we're supposed to is democracy to me, apparently. Mm-hmm. But as you can imagine, the ensuing fallout has been a fucking circus of conspiracy theories. But before we get into it, what do we know for sure? He was killed on July 7th, like I said, at around 1 a.m. local time. According to his wife, Martin Moise, the assailants broke into their like compound that they lived in and opened fire, hitting the president 12 times. He was found on the floor in a pool of his own blood with an eye gouged out, apparently. So this seems to be pretty personal, pretty fucking gruesome. She herself was wounded and was rushed to Florida because, of course, for treatment. She, of course, is in disbelief, because why would anyone want to do this, since everyone loved him and he loved everyone? Jovenel himself had been blaming his rivals and the oligarchy for all the unrest, because obviously poor people have no agency, don't have the capacity to understand and interpret their history and material conditions. Now, the police arrested 28 mercenaries, mostly Colombian, but all looks like it hinges on one man, according to them. A guy by the name of Christian Emmanuel Sanon, a Haitian national and Florida-based, again, because of course, doctor flew into Haiti in June with apparent political motives. The police chief, Leon Charles, said the following. This is an individual who entered Haiti on a private plane with political objectives. He said the initial plan had been to arrest the president, but the mission, quote, then changed. But he didn't elaborate on this. When he goes on to say, when we, the police, blocked the progress of these bandits after they committed their crime, the first person that one of the assailants called was Christian Emmanuel Sanon. He goes on to say he contacted two other people that we consider to be the masterminds of the assassination of President Jovenel Moise. The police chief did not say who the other people were. So again, take that with a grain of salt, because this is the police of Haiti saying this shit. So we actually don't know. I mean, again, can we trust what they're saying? After that, a couple of days later, U.S. security apparatus sent a couple of people to the ground to check what's going on. And now there's a bit of a clusterfuck on who's actually in charge, because the prime minister at the time was like, yeah, you know, I'm going to be in charge. But then a committee of different political parties came together and decided something else. They're going to appoint someone else. I think his name is Avril Henry. Was actually the prime minister. And I think even like half an hour ago, like before we like came on, they actually decided that that guy was going to be prime minister and they're going to try to figure out and shit. So again, this story, like the assassination took place two weeks ago, and minute by minute, this shit is changing. And in the ensuing time, people in charge in Haiti was like, oh, you know, US, my country yearns for freedom. Please send some troops and shit. That first, apparently Biden was like, nah, but then kind of relented. So nothing's really come out of this yet. Like, we're still in this like unknowing circus of just fucking garbage.
Oh God. So God bless you, Leroy, for giving us that timeline of events. Because like you said, there's so many layers to peel back here, right? And it, I mean, this is Haiti, right? We've talked about Haiti in the past as the protests against Jovenel Moïse were really like becoming, I mean, granted, they've been a thing for quite a while now, but in recent times when Moïse was basically ruling by decree and had people were questioning his legitimacy as president, right? If you recall, what was it, the Supreme Court had intervened and like said, no, actually, he's not president. This other dude is president. That literally happened only like a few months ago. We talked about that, and we do our best to cover Haitian politics, you know, with the degree of nuance and actually an understanding of the situation. But my God, when I saw that Moïse had been assassinated, like as anybody else would think, I couldn't believe it. I was just like, what? And just the layers of it. Like, we could do a whole podcast on the fact that these were Colombian mercenaries. That in and of itself is like, right, is like 10 layers deep.
Yeah.
Right? We could do a whole podcast on like, well, actually, when you go back, you know, you think about how Haiti's been like a neo-colony, like an explicit neo-colony of the United States since the earthquake, right? That in and of itself is like 30 fucking layers deep, right? The, as you mentioned, Leroy, the involvement of people from Miami, that's 10 layers deep. Like, it's almost impossible to really do this story as much justice as like I would like to.
Yeah, I remember, like, speaking of, like, when we found out because of the time difference, I remember I was sitting in bed, like, literally last minute scrolling to Twitter, and it comes up that he had been assassinated. And I send it in the group chat. I'm like, yo, this motherfucker was just assassinated. And we're like, what the fuck? And, again, speaking of podcasts and speaking of, like, the history and stuff, if you want really good context on the entire history of Haiti, check out Revolution's podcast, the series on the Haitian Revolution. And Behind the Bastards, he does a very good rundown of Haiti's history in the Papa Doc episode. So check that out, and gives you a lot of context to what's going on now. But yeah, like, and even with the Colombian mercenaries that you mentioned, apparently they were duped about their mission. Like, they did this and didn't realize that this is what they were doing and shit. Like, because even like in the photos of the lineup that because they always. The governments always want to make a show of whenever they catch mercenaries. Like, they look really just stunned and really like miserable, more so than just, mm-hmm, oh, we got caught. But like, wait, what the fuck? I thought everyone was involved in this and shit. So as much as we know nothing.
Yeah. That's the major takeaway, is that the, it reads like the gang's all here. Mm-hmm. With the involvement of Florida-based, you know, wealthy people, you know, expats, the involvement of Colombian paramilitaries, the involvement. It seems like a gang's all here moment, but it's like seeing shapes in the clouds. Like, the shapes aren't actually there, but it looks like it's there. So it seems to be, or at least what we know, was a kind of comedy of errors, almost like an Iannucci script, you know?
Yeah.
Like, that's what it comes across, but just with really deadly results. And, you know, what troubles me though is that the continuous instability of Haiti, combined with a Democrat president, because if there's one thing Democrats love to do, it's to invade and occupy Haiti. They've been doing it for a century. So that's very troubling.
You make a great point. And that was like, that was one of my, as far as like clouds in the skies or the metaphor you were using, like, that was my first thought when I saw this, right? Because I think like a lot of people justifiably had the thought of, oh, op. This is a fucking op. There's no way a head of state can get assassinated in the Western Hemisphere without like Southcom being involved to some extent, right? And that's right. Probably true, right? I'm not going to discount that, right? True. But at the same time, Moïse was so unpopular that like it's really not out of the question that just one of the Haitian billionaires, which, yeah, there are asshole billionaires that exist in poor, devastated Haiti, quote unquote, right? It's really not out of the question that some asshole Haitian billionaire was just like, let's get rid of this fuck, and just went rogue. Like, that's how unpopular this fucking guy was. There's that insane story that you kind of touched upon, Leroy, with what the fuck's this dude's name? Christian Emmanuel Sanon or whatever, who's like in the Haitian diaspora in South Florida, right? Who like apparently like talked with these guys and was planning on having himself installed as prime minister or some wild shit like that. And like, don't get me wrong, like, it's very possible that that's just some bullshit smokescreen, right? But we're getting to like JFK assassination levels of, oh, great, Jack Ruby just fucking killed Lee Harvey Oswald. What the fuck is going on right now, right? Like who hired him, right? Was it the government? Was it the mafia? Like, who the fuck even knows at this point?
The fucking Grassy Knoll?
Yeah, exactly. Grassy Knoll fucking did it. So, like, who even knows what's going on right now? And, like, I think it's, God, the one thing that is profoundly disturbing, right, that does like that does scream op, right, that does scream something concerted, is the fact that what is Claude Joseph, right, the prime minister, or I guess now former prime minister, what was he saying? You know, we just need UN peacekeepers, right? Yeah, you know, I think we do need the FBI and the fucking Department of Homeland Security to come in here. When he said, when he started doing that shit, that's when I was like, probably an op. Yeah, that's probably an op.
But that could be opportunism, though. Like, this could be the fact that this guy has no mandate, is in an even weaker political position than Moise was, and is just thinking, you know, how is it best for me to enrich myself? How can I best loot the country even further? Oh, I know, I'll invite the United States back in. I think this is another example of the clouds, you know, it looks everything. It's like everything. Look, it's quacking like a duck. It's walking like a duck. It's flying like a duck. It's shitting like a duck, but it's a goose.
It's a platypus.
Right.
No, exactly. That opens. That's a perfect like illustration of, we don't know what the fuck is going on, because it could have been that Moise got to the point where, yeah, he's US backed and all that, but he could have even been going rogue as well. Because, well, my people like are, you know, uprising, I'm not getting the support I want from the US, so, you know, fuck the US as well. Whereas the US couldn't handle it, and maybe the prime minister came up, you know what, let's orchestrate this, I'll install myself, and oh, look, we need US, whatever, blah blah blah. But it could have been whatever, you know what I mean? But like you said, we're dealing with a fucking platypus here.
That should serve as a lesson to any other satrapy of the United States, any of the compradors. The United States will not save you. They won't. The United States runs through compradors like fucking Kleenex. Like, just remember that they have no loyalty to their own agents.
Yeah, absolutely. And Leroy, the point you make at the end there about Moise is very, very important one, because now, have you seen what Moise's wife has been saying? Which is, oh, they killed him because Moise was going to push for democratic elections. You're now getting these like revisionist like conspiracy theories that no, they had to get rid of Moise because he was actually going to push for a democratic transition. So it's just layers of fuckery.
100%, and I think she legit was saying, yeah, because he was fighting corruption and blah. This, we cannot emphasize enough, this motherfucker was ruling by decree for 2 fucking years because he didn't want to step down, right? And I think it's important to note as well, they were going to have a referendum in September with, you know, new presidential elections, legislative elections, but part of the referendum would have, I think, abolished the prime minister position and would have given the president more power. So how can you fucking tell me that this guy was going to fight for more democracy, you know, quote unquote, more liberal democracy and whatever, when this is what the motherfucker was doing? Like, we already see, it's like clockwork, man, this fucking revisionist shit.
And yeah, I guess one of the last points I want to make here, and God, once again, no way we could do this story justice, but like, it was what, just like a week before Moise got assassinated that he had announced that Claude Joseph was going to be replaced as prime minister by Ariel Henry, right? But because that transition did not take place yet, that's why it was Claude Joseph who then assumed power after Moise's assassination, leaving them in this weird position where, okay, technically Ariel Henry was about to take power, but he didn't yet, so actually it's Claude Joseph. But now, as you said, Leroy, literally before we went live, Joseph announced that he would be relinquishing powers as the head of state of Haiti, whatever the fuck his title even is at this point, right? And giving it to Ariel Henry, who was the initial person that Moïse was going to designate as prime minister. Some shit like that. And it's almost impossible to keep track. But something that is important to remember before we leave this is that Joseph did announce that elections would be taking place in September. So we'll see how that goes. I mean, it's
maybe.
God, like, so, I know something we say consistently about Haiti is, you know, pay attention. There's a story to be mindful of. And this is why. Right. So that way people can develop who don't pay attention to Haiti. Right. Can develop a continuity and a narrative of, OK, this is what's happening in Haiti. Right. And so, you know, the next time some wild shit goes down, the next time somebody gets cooed or some shit in Haiti. Right. You saw Aristide came back after being treated for sickness in Cuba and had a great welcome response when he came back to Port-au-Prince. Right. It's important to be conscious of the narratives that are going on in Haiti because things are good. God, things are it's very sad, right? Yeah. We love Haiti. We love our Caribbean brothers.
Yeah, exactly right. I was going to say, if there's one thing we know about Haiti is that we stand in solidarity forever with the Haitian people, yeah, because they're the fucking blueprint of revolution in our hemisphere, in our region. So yeah, nothing but love for Haiti. And another eternal solidarity place for us, Cuba. So obviously, unless, again, you've been living under a rock, you know that protests, quote unquote, have been popping off in Cuba starting January 11th, again, under shrouds of this and that, whatever. And I want to be perfectly clear here, and I don't want to speak for y'all, but I think you'll agree that we stand in critical support for the Cuban Revolution and everything that's represented for our region. There are definitely things that need to be fixed, need to be changed, need to be, go back to the drawing board, corrected, because again, what we always talk about, contradiction comes up, we implement things, doesn't work, let's go back to the drawing board and try to, pin these contradictions together. But at the same time, like, all this other bullshit, I think I'm making myself clear here that at the same time, like, we still need to stand in solidarity with the revolution. We can't just look at it and be like, these things are popping off. This isn't perfect. So we need to throw the entire thing away, like some quote unquote socialists are doing. But yeah, a lot of gusanos out here showing their ass, treating solidarity as a transactional thing. It's really, to me, it was really interesting seeing like all these liberals in Miami and stuff with Black Lives Matter in their bios on Twitter immediately take it out when Black Lives Matter came out. I was like, yeah, let's end the embargo. And that was it. They no longer care about Black people's lives. You know what I mean? Which goes to show you that solidarity, not based on actual material desire for liberation, is all fucking bullshit.
So I'm going to place the tinfoil hat on my head, guys, right? Place it right on my head. I live with a tinfoil hat on my head. You know what I'm going to say about this?
I love a tinfoil hat.
You know what I'm going to say about this? Yeah. Every single thing we've talked about so far in the last 30 plus minutes is linked. Castillo, Moïse,
100%
protests. Dare I say it? Right? Hey, it's no mistake that literally a week before all this crazy shit started happening, who was in South America meeting with Bolsonaro? The director of the CIA, right? Burns, Mr. Burns. That's what Maduro called him when we met him. Mr. Burns. That literally happened. Mr. Burns, right, was meeting with Jair Bolsonaro. Literally a week before all this shit started popping off. And this is a meeting that took place only a couple weeks after Castillo's victory in Peru. Castillo's victory in Peru being earth-shattering, right? I just saw, because I'm an irresponsible podcast co-host, I was surfing through Twitter, right? I saw the New York Times' piece on Castillo, which says, despite it being the narrowest of margins, Castillo's victory is the clearest repudiation of Peru's establishment in 30 years. And that's true. It's a stunning result. Yeah. Pedro Castillo being elected president of Peru is devastating for the United States. Devastating, right? And of course, as we've said so much about Castillo, and obviously we're talking about Cuba now, but once again, this is important groundwork, I think. Obviously, like we said, Castillo can't do everything by himself, blah, 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 blah. But this is the kind of thing that the United States has to look at and be like, my God, a Marxist-Leninist political party won an election in Peru? We're going to lose Brazil.
Fuck yeah, we're going to lose Brazil. Yeah. We've already lost Chile. We might actually lose Colombia. What better than to strike at the very heart of the left in the Americas and put Cuba in peril, right? And attack Cuba from all sides and try and put Cuba on, oh my God, blah, 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 right? This goddamn, you know, dictatorship or whatever. What better than to, once again, try and threaten the left, you know, and put the left of the Americas on its heels than, once again, I'm not saying there isn't genuine anger and frustration with the Cuban government's response to the pandemic. That's happened everywhere, right? You know, government's going to government, as we say, right? But exactly, are we right. all, have we all, but have we all just had collective amnesia and forgotten that Cuba was manufacturing their own vaccine, right? How many fucking countries were doing that? How many governments were doing that, right? And this is the one that we're trying to say has a piss poor pandemic response? Get the fuck out of here, right? Now, don't get me wrong. Yeah. Now, don't get me wrong. Like yeah. I say, I'm not discounting the frustration people have, of course. But you know what is a big part of that frustration that nobody talks about in the media? What happened in just the final months of Trump's presidency? A further tightening of the screws on Cuba. That's what the Cuban people are feeling right now. The tightening of the screws from the United States, which makes it hard for them to put food on their plates, right? That's the issue. And that is why the United States, you'll see motherfucking senators like, fuck's his name, what, Chris Murphy from Connecticut or whatever. Oh, well, can't both things be true that it's a dictatorship and the embargo is, you know, hurting Cubans or whatever? Then lift the fucking embargo. But they're not going to do that. Because that embargo and the tightening of those screws are critical to what led to this protest movement that's happening in Cuba.
1,000%. And what do I keep saying? It's not the embargo. It's not the embargo. So it's socialism, dictatorship. Okay, fine. We believe you. Lift the embargo, you know, lift the sanctions and let it collapse on its own bad merits, right? But they won't fucking do that because they know what's up. Because Cuba, without, you know, a profit incentive, without capitalism that, you know, fosters innovation and, you know, entrepreneurial spirit, created their own fucking vaccine that they can't administer because they can't source syringes. You know what I mean? And people are like, oh, well, they can trade with any other country in the world. But when global trade is pegged to the U.S. dollar and there's sanctions on them using the U.S. dollar, they've literally cannot fucking trade with anybody else. Plus, every other country in the world who's semi-capitalist at best or at worst knows what's best for them. Like, you have like European countries, you know, if we trade with Cuba, we know what's going to be the U.S. retaliation. We prefer to trade with the U.S. because they're the global hegemon and blah, 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 blah. Speaking of hegemon as well, you talked about, you know, rightfully so, about the Secretary of State going to South America and how it's all linked. Because U.S. imperialism or imperialism in general is a global phenomenon, we were at a point where everybody was about to just take to the streets against Israeli genocide against Palestinians. It seemingly everyone's forgot that Israel was popping off increased genocidal attacks on the Palestinians, and everyone's focusing on Cuba now as well. Like, It's remarkable how skilled and how thorough these motherfuckers are at manufacturing consent, using the media, using popular fucking, you know, public relations and shit to craft a narrative, to craft like what everyone, you know, is thinking and talking about. It's quite fucking incredible.
It's very interesting narrative threads y'all are laying out. I'm curious, and I have it made me think of the future, right? So for the last 20 years, the major focus of U.S. Foreign policy has been in the, you know, Middle East, has been focused on the Middle East, but there's been a drawdown there. That is the drawdown. I fear that we are about to see not a pivot, you know, the pivot to China or whatever, or, you know, which was Obama's famous policy change. Like, he wanted to focus on the Chinese threat, quote unquote, right? I think, though, that Washington, D.C. is about to experience, you know, they're getting some nostalgia. They're busting out the old cocaine from the 80s that they had in their drawers, you know? Yeah. They are, I think we could very well see kind of a return of focus. Because not only that, now it's coming to their doorsteps. Because now we have a resurgent socialist movement in the United States, too. So all of a sudden, we have a large socialist organization that met with the great Satan Nicolas Maduro, right? So
the red Pope.
These are things being anti-pope. Noticed, and you know, I don't. and the fact that the director of the CIA did go and meet with Bolsonaro because he's their last guy. He's truly like the Colombian state has suffered, you know, constant demonstrations and insurrections against it for the last, what, like 3 or 4 years now? Just really intense shit, too. The FARC party, like you said, Austin, you know, what you've maintained for a while, which is that they did make the right decision in laying their arms down. I don't know if I entirely agree, but there's more evidence in your favor as of right now. But the big shift again is going to be Peru. Now we need to see how, and again, you know, we're going on massive tangents. We were supposed to talk about Cuba, but
all related,
you know, exactly. And that's exactly the next point, which is that nothing happens in isolation anymore. If it ever did, right? What happens, and you know, what happens in Cuba, what happens in Chile, what happens in the United States, all matters to each other. They all influence each other, both, and that goes for the right wing and the left wing.
Oh my goodness, so much to unpack from what you say. That you talk about, you know, in many ways, what we're talking about is the receding, we'll say, not the total loss, but the receding of U.S. worldwide hegemony, right? As you see the growth of China, right? And as you mentioned, okay, maybe a pullback from the, you know, the Middle East or, you know, other places in the world that the United States has tried to get, who has been really feeling real froggy and, right, focusing it back to its quote-unquote backyard, right? And it's interesting. People, you know, we talk about the Bolivian coup a lot, but I don't think we talk about what happened in Venezuela enough as a coup, right? That was a coup attempt, right? There were two coups that the United States has done in the last couple of years, Bolivia and Venezuela, right? Both of those things happened, right? Two coups in the span of, what, two fucking years, right? In two major fucking countries, right? And look at what happened in Ecuador. Look at the splitting of the Ecuadorian left, right? Where, like, I'm not trying to really put my tinfoil hat on, but here's the thing. You know, there's some bullshit that went on there, and we've talked about it ad nauseum in the past. Peru, they've lost. Chile, they've lost. Two critical allies. Brazil, they're on the fucking ropes, man. If they lose Brazil, that's devastating isn't even a fucking word, right? So once again, there's absolutely every reason to believe that that we're in the middle of a refocusing toward Latin America. Look at Joe Biden. He ran his whole fucking campaign on, oh, you loved Obama, I'm going to be his third term. Well, where the fuck has he not followed Obama's footsteps literally at all? Cuba, right? Thawing relations with Cuba. Instead, he's maintained what Trump did. Tightening the screws to lengths that have never been the case when it comes to Cuba. So that's, once again, devastating. And that's why, number one, the first and last, first, second, third, fourth, fifth thing that we need to be talking about when it comes to Cuba, end the fucking blockade. My God, end the fucking blockade.
100%.
And remember, they failed in Venezuela and Bolivia, right? Though Ecuador was victorious because it was really a result of internal contradictions within the indigenous political movements is really what it comes down to. And the failure of the socialist and the failure of the 21st century socialists to fully connect with the grassroots. That's not the case in Venezuela. It wasn't the case in Bolivia. In Bolivia and Venezuela, they had, you know, they had maintained a strong link between the official socialist parties as well and the social movements, which again in Latin America, really probably worldwide, is the special. That's the recipe. People always wonder, like, oh, how do we do this? How do we do that? Well, Latin America has shown us. The examples are right there, people. We don't have to try to reinvent the wheel. We know how to do this. It's just a matter of fucking doing it. It's the unglamorous work of fucking doing it. They've done it, right? Now, I don't know if the thing about the Cuban situation, though, is that they, much like Venezuela, I don't think that the Cuban revolution is in danger necessarily, without, short of like a straight up military intervention, which I doubt, which I sincerely doubt. Much like Venezuela, I don't think the movements get dislodged without direct military intervention. That doesn't mean it's impossible. If, you know, Peru's gone in their eyes, right? Chile is gone in their eyes. Brazil is on the chopping block. We could see some really weird shit happening. And, you know, kind of, this is a different point I'm about to jump into, just kind of somewhat unrelated. If you ever want to know, like, really just why the Cuban Revolution was so important, just look at the reaction of the United States towards various governments, historically Marxist-Leninist governments worldwide, right? What's the one that they, you know, there's a lot of nasty rhetoric about China, but the United States upper class still does business with China, you know, no matter what your position on China itself, they still do business with China. They do not do business with the United States, or with Cuba, pardon. They don't do business with Cuba. Always remember that.
Why? Because of the critically important example that Cuba provides to the rest of Latin America, right? That's why it's dangerous, right? So, and like something before I get to, oh God, a bunch of different points that you touched upon there, right? Like something that, a point that was driven home to me a lot when I was in Venezuela, right? Was that it's not just about the oil, right? It's not just about the oil. It's also about the example that Venezuela provides, right? It's not just about the natural resources that they target Venezuela. It's because of the example that Venezuela provides, right? In giving discounted oil to our Haitian brothers, right? Our Haitian brothers and sisters, right? That's why they hate Venezuela, right? And I think critically, like you mentioned, the odds of a war happening in Cuba are so low. I totally agree, right? But something I will say, in the past few years, like through my work in the largest socialist organization in the United States, as you referenced, right, engaging with people from Cuba, engaging with people from Venezuela, you know what they tell me, man? They tell me that not for much longer can they hang on in the face of such crippling sanction. You know, we talk about, you know, Cuba had the Soviet Union to help, you know, subsidize it or whatever the fuck, and then the special period, how tough that was. And then they were able to get a booming Venezuela and a strong Latin America to help them. That's not there anymore, man. They can't do this for 10 fucking years, right? That's why you're seeing protests like this, because people are starving, right? People are pissed off, right? And they have every right to be, right? But let's think about why they're starving, right? Let's think about why they can't put food on their fucking tables, right? And let's end this motherfucking blockade, right? But they're not going to end that fucking blockade. That's why, because they know how critical it is to putting pressure on the Cuban government and the Venezuelan government.
Yeah, not only that, but it's also the cynical political angle within the United States, right? Because I tweeted something out the other day about Florida. Like, sure. There's a lot of Cubans in Florida, but there's also a lot of Puerto Ricans in Florida. But who holds the power as a political bloc? Who's more adjacent to capital? It's the Cuban Americans in Miami. And again, we need to be very clear, that's not all of them, because there are, like you said, a lot of legitimate refugees from Cuba who just couldn't take it, who had to leave. Having spending a lot of time in Miami, being around a lot of bougie Cubans who came at the beginning of the revolution, there is a distinct dichotomy between the ones who came early and the ones who came after that, and how the ones who came before treat the later arrivals. Like, it's not even close. But they still hold a lot of the political power. And you have motherfuckers like Marco Rubio, fucking Rick Scott, like all the Florida politicians are going to do whatever the fuck they say to make sure that they stay in power, because they don't give a fuck about people starving in Cuba. They give a fuck about staying in power in Florida. You know what I mean? Because if they actually gave a shit about people in the Caribbean, you know, suffering, they'd be in Puerto Rico trying to sort that situation out. But they don't give a fuck. They don't give a fuck, because us as Puerto Ricans, we don't have that much political power in the state. You know what I mean? Also, it's really funny to me as well. You know, this whole thing is being painted by the U.S. State Department and like Americans and, you know, the same people we're talking about here as, you know, human rights violations and humanitarian crisis in Cuba. Only one country has torture centers in Cuba. And who's that power? The fucking United States and Guantanamo. You know what I mean? Like, we're the ones torturing people in fucking Cuba. So get the fuck out of that. And to your point about attention swinging from the Middle East to Latin America, whatever, that's, if you look into or research anything about the history of the CIA and the State Department, all the intelligence agencies and everything, that's by design. So we have to keep staying, we have to have that perpetual enemy. Like, people like to quote 1984. That's this. We have to be at war with someone at all the time. At first it was, you know, the communists, you know, the commies, the Red Scare and the Soviets and the Reds or whatever. When that started waning, oh, it was, you know, the Muslims and, you know, in the 70s, you know, Saudi Arabia and blah, blah, blah. And then Reagan came, oh, it's the communists again. The Soviet Union fell. Oh, it's the Muslims again, the Middle East. But now that people are starting to get bored of that, oh, it's the commies in Latin America and shit. And we have all these socialists popping up in the United States. It's obviously coming from there and blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. Like, it's all linked. It's all, again, like tinfoil hat. This is all popular opinion, public relations. It's all being designed by the CIA, by the State Department, by the people with political power and capital. Like, they're controlling this whole fucking narrative.
I've seen too many of my friends beaten by police. Not just like in person, but seeing video from across the country. We all have friends who have been beaten by fucking police. We've been attacked by police far too often to ever take any of that shit seriously. All of that rhetoric about the land of the free and all that, as, you know, oh, you think it's bad over here? Well, it's really bad over there. Yeah, get fuck off. Come on. Does anybody believe it anymore?
Just quickly, since you brought up the police, like, I think it's really funny that you have all these, like, quote, activists in the U.S. finding themselves at the same protests agreeing with the cops and stuff. Because I'm here protesting for, like, you know, Cuba and, like, human rights. But there's a bunch of police in, like, MAGA hats. Like, what is this about? It's like, look around you. Look who the fuck you're agreeing with, man. You literally have the same opinions as these motherfuckers. You have the same opinions as fucking Elliot Abrams. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah. And so we are way over time on this story. But last thing I'll say here on this one, because I do want to at least talk about Chile for a little bit.
Put it
about. Oh my gosh, Leroy, the point you just made about, like, if, you know, comrades, right? Protesting and shit like that. Shout out to the homies down in Orlando DSA, right? Who, one of the Orlando DSA homies went viral recently on Twitter for a video that he posted saying, look at this. Look at the police escorting these SOS Cuba protests when street protests on this fucking boulevard were literally made illegal in Florida earlier this year, right? When it's leftists doing it, they get the shit kicked out of them. When it's these, when it's these motherfuckers, they get escorted, right? And that's a critical point. And it's, and my homie down there put an important follow-up tweet. This is a state-sponsored protest, literally, right? But of course, because the United States, nobody frames it like that, right? Only if it's Venezuela does it get framed like that. Oh, a state-sponsored protest. The regime. Right? You know, only if it's a black or brown country do we use that sort of rhetoric, right? And another point, you know, God bless our homies down in Miami who are also waging this fight, right? There was I would be remiss without shouting out our homies down there in the Troika Collective who do work with some of our comrades in Miami DSA, right? Who some of their homies got arrested during an anti-intervention protest they were doing, a hands-off Cuba rally they were doing in Miami. Some of our homies down there got arrested after getting provoked by right-wing provocateurs. So once again, the police are literally on the side of these fucks, and once again, that's an important thing to point out. And God, we could literally talk about this story fucking forever.
Liberals, Proud Boys, and cops all together, because all together united.
Fascism.
Yeah. Because what I said, not left or right, is always right. You know what I mean? This is the natural conclusion of fucking, like, liberalism. It's fascism. Fucking Fanon said it. Fucking fucking Sarah said it. Basically, like, it's the same shit. And I'm so happy that you brought up Florida, man, because that illustrates perfectly, like, the political dynamics in fucking Florida. Look who's allowed to do things. Look who's allowed to speak up. Look who's allowed to do all this shit. And we're talking about Orlando. We're not talking about Miami. Cops escorting people in fucking Orlando. The same fucking cops who were literally kettling protesters in Orlando last year as they were trying to leave. They protested, like, okay, let's wrap it up. Let's go home. They were being fucking kettled in downtown Orlando, man. Like, I'm from Orlando. I'm from Central Florida. So this shit is fucking like, it's, look at Florida, man. It hinges on fucking Florida. Anyway, let's put a bow on this because again, we could do a whole, fucking like thing about this. But again, this illustrates that Cuba and Haiti are not simple. But before we go, before we leave, we'll wrap it up with stories out of Chile. They had the primaries yesterday, the day before, whatever, time's a myth anyway. Our boy Daniel Jadue of the Communist Party of Chile, or one of the communist parties in Chile, was by all intents and purposes the favorite to win the primaries of the left-wing coalition. We were cheering him on. Didn't work out that way. A guy by the name of Gabriel Boric. Gabriel? His first name Gabriel? Anyway, Boric. He ended up winning. He's part of one of the socialist parties down there. Isn't quite, from what little I know, he's more, I don't want to say moderate, but I guess, for lack of a better term, he's a bit more of a moderate sort of leftist, which might be okay in terms of like the political atmosphere and political climate down in Chile. But either way, as soon as it came out, they were both very cordial. They're both very amicable. They both came out. Boric thanked Jadue, goes, yeah, look, you know, thank you for the fight. But I'm looking forward to uniting with you and building, you know, a proper post-Pinochet Chile.
So, shameless moment that I'm going to have here. For a lot of people on Twitter, it seemed like last night was the first time they were hearing about Gabriel Boric. However, if you're a proper Machete Matista and you listen to our Chile analysis that we did a month ago, you would have heard me talking about Gabriel Boric, because this did not come as too much of a surprise to me. I'm going to be completely honest. And here's why. Because the people that I've engaged with in Chile literally for this entire year have been telling me how much they love and are excited for Gabriel Boric. This dude has a deep, deep connection to the bases in Chile and is very well liked among the social movements, among the different political parties, right? So what the fuck am I even talking about? The Apruebo Dignidad Coalition is who held their primaries, right? The Apruebo Dignidad Coalition is a coalition of coalitions, actually. Specifically, the Broad Front and Chile Digno, right? The Broad Front encompasses a couple different parties, right? This is what we've talked about a lot, Frente Amplio, right? The Broad Front encompasses a bunch of different like democratic socialist parties, right? I would refer to them, including Social Convergence, right? La Convergencia, right? Really good people. Revolución Democrática, another democratic socialist party. These are really good people. And as I mentioned, the other coalition that's within Apruebo Dignidad, Chile Digno, this is the coalition that is led by the Communist Party of Chile, right? So what's so beautiful and so amazing, and what I think is that my biggest takeaway from last night, right, or from this weekend, I should say, in Chile, is that the left is coalescing around one candidate. That's amazing. And this is why I mentioned Gabriel Boric a month ago, because the people I know in the Broad Front were telling me, yeah, we're working with the Communist Party, we're going to have a joint primary, and we're all going to coalesce around one candidate. That's beautiful, right? That's how they're going to win in Chile, right? The entire left coming together, right? And, you know, I know a lot of people were excited about Jadue and excited about the Communist Party, and I get it. I was too. But Gabriel Boric, this is a good dude. This is a person that is a leftist. That is somebody we should be coalescing around, right? I would almost frame it like this, right? We're kind of in like a reverse Peru situation. Instead of Castillo, we got Mendoza, right? We love Veronica Mendoza. Veronica Mendoza would still be a massive step forward for Peru, right? We didn't get Jadue. We got Boric. Boric is a great, great, would be an amazing step forward for Peru, right? So I think Gabriel Boric, I think that's a very important context to have. Also, randomly enough, this dude is in the Chamber of Deputies for Chilean Antarctica. So that's amazing, right? Whatever the fuck that means. Yeah, exactly. That's kind of hilarious. I think... I wish, once again, I know we're already over an hour here, so I wish we could do a little bit more justice to this story and more justice to Chile. And once again, it's like we talk about providing a roadmap. T, you mentioned a roadmap as far as, oh, Latin America. My God, you want to see the fucking roadmap? Look at Chile this past couple years. Look at Chile, right? A movement that did not just end with spontaneous protests. They said, we're changing this fucking constitution. We will not leave these streets until we change this fucking constitution, right? Beautiful. And they've done it, right? They've gone all the way to where they are shredding Pinochet's constitution as we record, right? Shredding that fucking thing. And not just that, the left, as I mentioned, is they're putting their bullshit aside, right? They're coalescing around one candidate for November's elections. And that is why you're going to see
communists in government in Chile when Gabriel Boric wins, right? You heard it here first, folks. Now, we'll see what the fuck happens. But I'm optimistic for Chile. I really am. I'm extremely optimistic for Chile. Much like Pedro Castillo truly was able to tap into the anger of the protests that happened in Peru, A Prueba Dignidad, Gabriel Boric, the Chileans, they are truly the faces of this protest movement, right? Especially, you know, the Communist Party being a part of this coalition. They were a big part, one of the biggest reasons the Communist Party had gotten such a big base of support. And, you know, they've still got the mayor of Santiago, right? The Communist Party's here to stay, right? One of the biggest reasons was because the Communist Party did not sign on to the government agreement to stop the protests and begin the constitutional convention process, right? Because they, along with a lot of people in the basis, thought that this was not enough, that we needed more, right? So once again, this is a beautiful coalition. This is a beautiful moment for Chile. And I think, this is Gabriel Boric, somebody we should all be supporting. But, you know, yeah.
Well, it's a great example of pragmatism on the part of the Communist Party. They know when to... a good socialist or communist party is gonna kind of know when to go maximalist and then also know when to talk to other people. The parties in Chile have really navigated it this moment very well. The roadmap, of course, you know, they've burned down government buildings in Chile. They've had mass strikes in Chile. Both, you know, good ones and bad ones. We talked one about some of the shittier ones several months ago now. What's most interesting to me, I think, is the great flexibility that the leftist parties in Chile have demonstrated, and their willingness to put aside their own beefs for the greater good. A lot of lessons there. They know when to go maximalist and they know when to be diplomatic.
Absolutely. And once again, roadmap, such big, valuable lessons coming from Chile this past year. But also I think an important thing to point out is that Gabriel Boric gained prominence as a student leader, right? Bringing things full circle in Chile, right? That's where it started. This all started when high school students said, fuck your subway fares, right? And started a Fair Evasion campaign. That's where it all started. So I think that's beautiful. It's coming full circle where this average fucking dude who was a student leader, right? That's how he got his reputation in Chile, might become the fucking president, right? And this is, once again, it can't be like, my God. It's words can't do it justice, right? Pedro Castillo, a fucking dude from the countryside who will become president of Peru. Gabriel Boric, some fucking dude who was a student leader who it's been made a lot on Twitter about. He was like in a heavy metal fan and like that's part of like his image and shit like that. And he's a guy who's very active on social media, right? This dude could become president of Chile, right? Chile, where motherfucking Sebastian Piñera, the fucking CEO of Coca-Cola Chile, or fucking like the right-wing golden boy, this fucking guy, where he's president, Gabriel Boric might become the fucking president. That's some crazy fucking shit.
Yeah, just quickly with Piñera, and not forget, like, his brother was the architect of like their whole pension system that underpins the entire neoliberal economy of Chile. So yeah. When we talk about neoliberalism in Chile, we're talking about their pension system. It was his motherfucking brother, in conjunction with the Chicago Boys, that did all that. Go ahead.
Sorry, just I was going to put a bow on this, so I hope there wasn't any other thoughts. The last thing I was going to say was something that Gabriel Boric said at his after he won the nomination, which is Chile. They say Chile. Yeah, you know where I'm going to go? They say Chile was the cradle of neoliberalism. Well, it's also going to be its grave, right? So that's fucking beautiful.
Now, I was going to say that apparently Boric, when he, in his acceptance speech, his victory speech, I think he quoted or made reference to Allende, which speaks to the idea that, you know, the revolution there in the 70s, in the late 60s, never ended. Like, the workers were still there. The people were still there. The socialists, the communists, the leftists, the students, they were still there, albeit repressed under a very deeply fascist neoliberal, you know, system. But now, you know, the phoenix from the ashes is rising and they're about to take power again. And it's just incredible. All right, so we'll just put a bow on it there, because again, we could be talking about this forever, especially Haiti and Cuba. And again, like I can't you know, overemphasize this enough. Any story we ever do on Cuba or Haiti, or even any story we do in fucking Latin America, period, like we'll never be able to do proper justice, because there's too many moving parts. The machine has too many moving parts, too many cogs in there, complicated history, very, very important history. But like I said, in terms of Haiti, if you want the context, because that's a convoluted mess of a history, check out Revolution's podcast and his series on the Haitian Revolution and Behind the Bastards, when he talked about Papa Doc. He did a very good rundown of the history of Haiti leading up to fucking Papa Doc and the Duvalier family and shit. So check that out. Again, if you like what we do, you want access to the Discord I talked about to come hang out with us, and want access to our After Dark specials, or I guess at this point they're specials, supposed to be, you know, regular episodes, but we only ever do them every once, whatever. Consider showing your solidarity on our Patreon. At obviously patreon.com/machetemate. If you haven't already, check out, and you have access to a checkout, Austin's detailing of the delegation to Venezuela, which is really, really fascinating. It's a two-parter, so make sure you check out both parts. Check out the conversation we had with Fern last week, especially if you want more insight into the nitty-gritty of Brazilian politics and immigrant workers in the U.S. It's really, really fascinating from such a beautiful soul and such a good guy. It was an amazing conversation to have. And yeah, thanks for tuning in.
Yeah, no doubt.
All eyes on Haiti, all eyes on Cuba, all eyes on Latin America. Congratulations, Pedro Castillo.
Yeah, and sorry, just wanted to really quickly just plug that I recently was on the District Sentinel podcast. That was awesome. Really good homies. I think we mentioned on maybe the Fern episode I was on Left Reckoning recently as well. That was extremely awesome. I recently did the Magnificast. Check those people out. Religious Socialism podcast. Really good people. This weekend, I will be doing Kenzo Shibata's show again as well. Shout out, Kenzo. That'll be extremely fun. And once again, just trying to do my best in spreading the gospel of Machete Matismo. So back to you, Leroy.
1,000%. And you do a magnificent job. Magnificent job being a representative. Anyway, with that said, we'll catch y'all next time. And hasta la victoria.
Peace.
Later, y'all.